This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Congratulations, you've found the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and thank you for leaving us all those reviews on iTunes. We do appreciate them. They are very important. Please keep them coming. If you want to get involved in the general conversation, come follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon. And of course, if that's not enough rugby for you, every Monday without fail, post Lions now, there is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the world's biggest rugby podcast, out every week without fail, even in the off-season. So go find me, Tim, and Phil there. I could not be more excited about today's guest. So here it is, this week's Rugby Dungeon. Now, it's my pleasure to talk to someone who I've wanted to talk to since the inception of this podcast. Finally got the opportunity to do it. It's Exeter's number 10 and Premiership champion, Gareth Steenson. How are you, Gareth?
I'm very well, Johnny. Sorry it's taken so long to get in touch with you, but nice to be involved now.
How does that sound when anyone says Premiership champion?
Yeah, it's a bit surreal still. It's sort of sinking in a little bit now that we've been back a few weeks now training, and it's definitely very nice. I never thought I'd hear those words coming after my name, if I'm being honest, you know, from where we've come and stuff. So it's a very nice place to be.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. Just describe how it was when that final whistle went, and then what did you and the boys get up to straight after?
Oh, look, straight after it was sheer relief more than anything, I think. Just that initial, it was the way the game ended as well, obviously, with it being such a tight affair, and then having to hold on to the ball for 2 minutes, because that was probably the longest 2 minutes of our lives, not getting away a penalty, and, you know, there was so much riding on it, but we'd done that, you know, practice those scenarios, and it was great to see it finally come to fruition, and whenever it actually the whistle went, it was just sheer relief, and then we were just sort of, you don't know who you were talking to or hugging each other after it, you know, but it's quite funny because the only thing you can really remember is the moments after the game. I can only sort of envisage everything now through a television.
Yeah.
It's very strange whenever you look back at things, but yeah, it was a great experience, and obviously the walk around the pitch after was great that I could do that with my family as well. So moments I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
When you sat down in the change room afterwards, was it that elation or was it just a huge adrenaline dump? I can't work out how it must feel.
Oh no, once we got back in together as a group, Rob was very much, once we, you know, went round and seen the supporters and, you know, just had a bit of time with our families, it was very nice that we could all just sort of go in as a group and have a huddle in the change room after and just sort of, you know, basically say, lads, congratulations, you know, we've done it. We'd been in the exact same change room the year before and we'd had a different kind of conversation, and
yeah,
we're standing 12 months on, and after the start we had, it was just fantastic to share it as a group. And there was a few drinks taken in there. It was very special to be able to sit and have some real nice conversation with each other and just share a bit of time with each other.
Yeah, after that Saracens game, did you feel it might have been your year? Because Saracens have been such a pain for you in the previous couple of years.
Oh, no, like, I think we were quite confident whenever we were going into the semi-final with Saracens, because we were quite fortunate that they had obviously played such an emotional game the week before in the final, and we had two good solid weeks of pre-season, and we always feel like we've always been in good games with Saracens. We've never really been blown away by them as such, and we kind of always feel that we've got a game that can match them and sometimes, you know, obviously take them as well. So we were confident going into the match, and obviously being at Sandy Park was a huge thing for us to have as well. And actually, that was definitely the semi-final was probably one of the best atmospheres I've ever experienced at Sandy Park.
Yeah.
You know, throughout my entire career. I remember arriving at the ground and we go for a run around at about an hour and a half by four kickoff, and the ground was nearly full at that point. And I remember getting goosebumps just going for a run around in the warm-up, you know. So it was, there was definitely an emotional charge of the whole thing. Was fantastic, but we still left it a bit late to get the job done, but thankfully we did.
As a diligent interviewer would do, I've been on your Wikipedia, and I'm trying to work out how it is, because obviously listening to you, you're clearly from Ulster, but your first club registered is Rotherham. So how did you go from Northern Ireland over to Yorkshire?
Well, I was in the Ulster Academy at the time for about 2-3 years, and I'd done all the age grades with Ireland and went right through. And I spent a couple of years with Queen's University, and then I went on to Dungannon Rugby, and I wasn't really getting a chance to play for Ulster. I was sort of in the development sort of contracts, and it basically came to a head that David Humphreys was going to have another year. I was sort of waiting to him for him to retire, really. And when Mark McCall told me that we're going to keep David for another year, it was sort of, right, I've either got to go find a job here, or, you know, I've got to try and do something a little different. And thankfully, a guy called Andre Bester, who coached Belfast Harlequins at the time, he had moved over to Rotherham, and he'd already asked me the year before to go, but I was still trying to hang on to potentially get a chance to play for Ulster. And by that stage, I didn't really have any option, and I took a leap of faith and, you know, went with Andre for a year, and really enjoyed my time at Rotherham and gave me a taste of playing at what was National League rugby at the time. And it was probably one of the best decisions ever made.
Did you have dropping down into what might have been considered an inferior league? Because obviously, if you had your shot at Ulster, it'd be straight into Pro 12 rugby and the top level for that nation.
Well, no, I never, because I'd never really had an opportunity to play at Pro 12 rugby or the Celtic League as it was at the time. And for me, it was just a stepping stone to really go. Like, for me, it was a step up, because I was playing club rugby at home, which, no disrespect to the leagues at home, it's not anywhere near as competitive, or, you know, you're playing with guys who are in similar position to myself, trying to get contracts with provincial clubs. And for me, it was a complete leap of faith a wee bit, but because I knew nothing about the league, I knew nothing about Rotherham. I remember arriving into the clubhouse and never seeing the place before, and, you know, there wasn't even sat navs back then. I had to print out the directions online and had them all sitting beside me in the car on the drive over. So it was quite. I had to grow up pretty quick, which for a bloke from Northern Ireland who never really went away from home was quite a big thing.
Yeah, so fill in the blank then between then and going to Cornish Pirates, because that strikes me as where it all started to really take off for you.
Yeah, well, no, I think when I was at Rotherham, we had a very good team. We had a team based around a big forward pack, which was had Henry Faree, these guys who actually went on and played for England.
Yeah.
You know, we had a real strong South African-based pack, and I think our top try scorer that year was Mr. P. Try. So I think we had a lot of scrum penalties, and I think we had 17 scrum penalty tries in the year. So, you know, we had a real strong pack, and we ended up just one win behind Leeds, who got promoted that year. So, and then it was just really, I got an opportunity that Cornish Pirates had obviously played against them a couple of times. They said, look, we're interested in you coming down. And, you know, it was just another step along the ladder. It was Cornish Pirates were a professional club, whereas Rotherham weren't really at the time. We were still semi-pro and we were training in the evenings. But for me, Cornish Pirates, it was a big, big change again, obviously moving from Yorkshire right the whole way down the other end of the country. But it was another opportunity. I never got a chance back home. Nobody came knocking, asking, how you doing, Gareth? Would you like to come back? So I took another chance and away I went and did a year down there. And it was a good year for me. From a professional point of view, but personally, it was a year that was quite tough because I lost my father that year.
Okay.
He died of bowel cancer during it, so it was a bit. I always felt a wee bit far from home when I was down there, because trying to get back and forth to see my mum or family, and it was always a bit tough.
In hindsight, do you find it weird that no one from Ulster was kind of checking up to see how you were getting on, or anyone from Ireland? Because, you know, it's not as if fly halves grow on trees, is it?
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, it's never been an option for me. I know you could be playing for Ireland, all this, that, and I've never ever been really contacted by anybody. Any provincial side has never come in and asked for me to go home, and I don't really have any interest in really sort of going home to it, because I'm very aware that I've spent most of my career, my professional career, in England. You know, and they've been very good to me. That, well, obviously the club that I'm at the minute, but even those two clubs that I was at, it was great times for me. The learning curve that I got, and I probably did it very differently to what. Well, I never would have dreamt of doing it the way I did.
Well, to be fair, I don't think anyone's done it really the way that you did, at least not recently. And also, the system is not set up to do it the way you did. Think about the academy credits, think about the eligibility laws about playing overseas. You know, it is very, very unusual.
You know, it's... Obviously, that's the way things are. It was for me, and that those are opportunities. That was the way it sort of happened for me. It sort of fell into place. I'd be very quick to say to fellas, I would say it to guys more so at home, because there is only four provinces at home. There's only four, you know, teams you can maybe get yourself into, but... You know, there is more opportunities across the water. I kind of know the way guys think back home. You tend to grow up wanting to play for your province, but at the end of the day, it's a professional sport, and as much as there's pride and everything, you know, wanting to wear the jersey for the team that you've grown up maybe supporting, there's great opportunities across the water for guys who want to maybe, you know, further themselves, and you never know, the opportunity might come that you get the chance to go back home and maybe play for these sort of teams. But for me, I probably, like I said, I went a roundabout way of doing it, and at no point did I ever think that that's the way it would happen for me, but it just was the way it was paved out for me.
Are you quite a confident individual?
I'm quite confident in my own ability, yes. I'm quite well used to being told that I'm not good enough to do things, but I've probably got a wee bit of a grit about me, this sort of determination that I'll always try to, you know, get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I'm used to always being told you maybe can't, you're not physical enough, you can't tackle, you can't do this. But, you know, it's just, that's people's outside opinions, you know. I'm quite confident in my own ability. I kind of know what I can and can't do, and I like to try and do it as best I can, what's good, you know.
Do you mind if I ask, has there ever been a particular instance of someone saying something like, you know, you're not good enough for X, Y, Z reason that has really stuck with you?
Nothing in particular, no. I think I always felt that I was kind of funny. I would change the statement now, but whenever I was a bit younger, I always felt I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. It was sort of like, I seemed to be the guys that I sort of grown up with, when I think of it, like Tommy Bow and Stephen Ferris, these guys, you know, these are the guys like Rory Best. I trained with all these guys, and they seemed to be getting contract, getting playing,
yeah,
getting opportunities, and I always seem to be missing out on them. But now I probably say the exact opposite. I feel I'm probably, when I joined Exeter Chiefs, I couldn't have joined at a better time. So I've probably got, you know, when it, and it's all said and done, and it's all went round the circle, I think I'm in a very good place now, as opposed to what I was thinking whenever I was maybe 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I always think it's such a remarkable thing to have won not one league, but two leagues in the same nation. So you often get guys who, you know, maybe go to Toulon, and then they might go somewhere else, and they, you know, you can win multiple top level, but to come all the way through is just such an astounding achievement. When you were in the Championship, I assume you always felt that you were good enough to go up a level, but did you feel that you were always good enough not only to go up a level, but then to win that next level?
Well, that's the first time I ever thought about winning two leagues in one country. I'd never even thought of that. Honestly, no, because I'd never played in the Premiership before, so it was more, when I got over here, it was more, right, I've just got to get playing. It was more about getting contracts whenever I'd first come over and making a career for myself out of it. And then it got to the point, when I got to the Chiefs, you could see there was ambition of the club to go forward. So then, you know, I bought into that, and that was all about going and winning. And when we won the league, it was more, we'd never played in the Prem before as a group, and we were very, well, some fellas had, but a lot of guys hadn't, and it was about really just going along and enjoying the occasion, enjoying being in the Premiership, you know, never thinking of it as a slog, because we were very fortunate. We'd been to dark places, we'd played in some, you know, no disrespect to the league, but we'd played in some places which were, you know, hard to go to, and to be in the Premiership, we've seen it as a bit of a privilege and a bit of an honour, and we enjoyed every opportunity we got. And it was always about just trying to build and escalate, but I never thought we'd win, be sitting here, you're calling us Premiership champions. I never thought I would see the day that I'd be playing in that sort of situation. I definitely thought the club was going forward and would do it, but I think to do it in our time scale is pretty special.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement. And now you're in your testimonial year.
Yeah, it's it's strange because I'm only coming in, when I come into training this week, you know, and we're sitting down in the changing room, you're looking around you and there's a few of the old heads that used to sit around you are sort of gone, and you're sort of looking, oh dear, I'm looking here, we've got about 3 or 4 of them left, and I'm sitting here and I'm surrounded by 20-year-old kids who are all lifting massive weights and are super quick and super fit, and you're like, all right, so I've got to go again to try and keep up with these guys. But yeah, like, that's just the way things go. That's what happens in time. But I'm very fortunate to have been at the club for as long as I have, and I'm still really enjoying my rugby, and I probably feel I'm in a good place physically to hopefully try and hold my own against the young fellas in fitness tests and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, once the season gets up and running, you know, it's very exciting that we can go into it in a completely different scenario, different challenges now, because, you know, we're actually going in as the champions, and how would champions want to be viewed? Well, we don't want to go out and, you know, just fall away from the west side. We want to go and drive ourselves forward, because we've always talked about going forward as a club, so no reason to stop now.
Would you consider one of the main honours now that you are Premiership champions, that people are going to start abandoning you as their second favourite team, because all of a sudden everyone wants to beat you?
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. That's probably what comes with the territory a little bit. We've been very fortunate to be always been the plucky underdogs. I think that's been something that's been probably we've always had ever since. Even last year, whenever we got into the final, we were still the plucky underdogs. We were going to do it, where we were not. But I think we're probably moved on a little bit from there now. You know, teams are probably going to turn around and say they're all coming after us, which is a lovely place to be for us, because it's a, like I said earlier, it's a completely brand new challenge to us as a group. Do we want to just say, all right, here we come, or are we going to roll our sleeves up and get on with it and hopefully be better from the experiences of it? I'd like to think that's what we're going to do. I don't think we're just going to sit back and go, oh, we've done it, lads. You know, we've got a lot more things that can be achieved. We can do a lot better in Europe.
Yeah.
We've only ever got to the end or the quarterfinal once. So we want to get ourselves into a knockout stage of that. And we obviously want to try and retain the title that we've got at the minute as well. So we've got a lot of work to do if we're going to keep ourselves as champions of this country.
Does the task of retaining the title feel bigger than the task of actually getting it in the first place?
It's hard to say at the minute, because we've only done a couple of couple of weeks of pre-season. It's a nice, like I said, it's completely brand new, and everybody wants to have new challenges in their career, and all the young fellas coming through, it's great that they've all had a wee taste of now. They're champions of England themselves, and they can push this club on. We've guys here are like 21, 22 years of age who won a Premiership title. They can have 10 years of doing this and being in the you want to be a top two, top three team in the Premiership year in, year out, which means you're going to be going well in Europe. So that's the way we've got to really approach it.
Now, I alluded to it before, but let's talk about it a bit further. Your testimonial year. Now, forgive my ignorance. What do you need to do to qualify for a testimonial? And then, what have you got planned for this year?
So, yeah, well, I'm going into my 10th season at the club, so they've granted me a testimonial year out of there. You know, I've been very fortunate. They've said to me that you've been at the club for so long and you've worked so hard, so we'd like to, you know, hope maybe give something back to you. For me, you know, we've got a few events planned. We've got an event planned on the weekend of the 12th of August, where we've got the Classic Lions coming down to play against the team that won promotion that night for us
in
the
wow.
Championship. So that's going to be a really good weekend. We've actually got an evening planned the night before, where we're going to have, hopefully, Jack Noel comes back from the Lions tour. He's going to sit and have a conversation about his tour that he's just had. And we've got these guys down for the weekend, like the likes of Mike Tindall coming along, Lee Mears. You know, we've got JPR Williams is going to be there, and just sort of sit down, have a bit of dressing room banter, having a chat and stuff on the night before, just almost like a little supper for guys, just so people can come and sit and mingle with these guys. And it's going to be great to see the old Championship boys back again.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge thing what they've done, and it should never be forgotten that the club would never be in this situation to go and win Premiership championships, or playing in Europe, playing against Toulon, the teams that we've played against. These things wouldn't have happened if, you know, things didn't fall into place, you know, all those years ago. So it's quite a special moment to get those guys back together, and it's going to be a good fun.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On weekend of, hopefully we're looking to do a bit of a family fun day leading into it. So it's not just purely rugby. We're going to try and paint the club in as best of light as possible. But that's for the end of August. So we've got a couple of other things planned. I think we're looking, one of my charities and supporting is Macmillan Nurses, so we're going to do a coffee morning for that.
Excellent.
You know, so we've got things planned throughout the year, but not too many things, but just at the minute it's all guns blazing and we're all trying to get ready for the weekend of August the 12th.
In my mind, not to tell you your business and what you should do for your testimonial, but I think an event in the standoff would create considerable interest.
Well, I think that's going to be an auction prize, potentially, maybe for a couple of events. So, it's an interesting place. I haven't been in it. Well, we're all in it now, to be fair. It was well rated after the finals, so I might have to restock it. I haven't been in it recently. I've been away on a holiday, so I've been avoiding it the last few weeks. It was pre-season starting again.
Tell me, what was the genesis of the standoff? Where did all this begin?
Well, we had a player here, Brett Sturgis, for years and years, and he had a bar himself in his garage, which was more for the older guys, which he called the Grafters.
I like that.
He had a bit of a... He came up with the idea, and I kind of like the idea of just having... You tend to collect a lot of memorabilia over the years, and but my wife doesn't really let me put it up in the house, so it's like, well, it's just going to sit in drawers, or, you know, it's not on display. So when I moved house, and we moved into a nice house, we got... We had the garage there, and it was sort of just left. It used to be just a fridge sitting outside, and I would sit outside somewhere like a man cave almost. And Brett came around one day and he said, you know, we could put a wee bar just about there. We'll build this. And so I was like, all right, fine. He came around and we spent the day at it. The next thing, I thought this little bar was just going to be something sitting in the corner. It'd be really simple. And once he got the tools out, he fancies himself as a bit of a handyman. Once he got the tools out, the next thing would... We'd screwed this thing into the floor and it was, you know, pretty big. And I was like, the wife came home and was like, oh, right, so it is actually a bar. It's no longer my garage. So, it just sort of escalated. And I've just been very fortunate that, I suppose, with social media and the guys tend to like to come around and just sort of sit and chill out. It's somewhere we can come after a game. And boys, you know, they don't go out into town too often, so they can just come sit, have a drink, maybe have a chat about the game, maybe watch a bit of telly. You know, it's just somewhere just... very quiet and reserved.
Well, I always thought that if I got the opportunity to interview, I would put forward a name for another bar which you should either set up or somehow incorporate this into the standoff's name, which is the Exeter Cocktap. That has to be the best name for a bar that I can think of.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, all right. I'm sure someone will come up with one sometime.
Excellent. Well, let's just turn our attention back to rugby, because one of the great moments, I think, of last year's Heineken Cup was your visit over to Ulster. Just tell me about that, because that was a magnificent game.
Yeah, no, it was a very special occasion for me and for Ian Whitten, especially.
You know, oh yeah, of course.
You know, it was very emotional for us going home, and for me it was the first time we've been there in pre-season games, but to go over there and to play in a big European Cup night was always something that I'd always wanted to do. And albeit I never thought, like when I was a kid, I never thought I'd be wearing a different jersey. I thought I'd be wearing the white one. But, you know, I think it just shows where the club comes from, because I remember going home on holidays and people coming up to me and asking me, oh, are you still playing rugby? Or I'm playing for Exeter Chiefs now. And people looking at me going, who are they? You know, and here we are on a night, on a Saturday night. I know it was pouring down rain and everything. And here we are playing against Ulster and, in what was arguably at the time, you know, Ulster had obviously lost their first game and we had lost ours. It was a big game, big fixture, and to get the thing back on track, and it was a big European night, and the buzz around it, I know we lost and it was a bit dramatic how we lost and stuff, but it was definitely one of the most enjoyable games I've had of my career, to be honest, going back and doing it. And it was nice to get them back to Sandy Park and give them a good hiding.
Yeah, and you really did, actually.
Yeah, no, it was lovely, you know. It was a great experience for me to be able to go home and see a lot of my family coming along to see Exeter Chiefs playing live, where they could drive an hour up the road. And I think I had about 20 people in the stands, and I had people coming out that I went to school with were all of a sudden texting me and wishing me all the best. And, you know, that was a lovely thing for me to be able to go back and see them all as well. So it wasn't a result, but as a game, it was really enjoyable.
Who do you class as your as the biggest influences on your career?
That's quite hard, really. I'd say my parents were very... definitely everyone sort of says it, but I had an opportunity... Well, not an opportunity, but I was when I was young, I had a chance, really, to... Was I going to play, or was I going to have to go and find a job? And, you know, we had some interesting conversations together, and they definitely gave me the push to say, right, you know, this is what you want to do. Take that leap of faith and go off to Rotherham. And, you know, I think that was a massive moment. My agent as well, sort of, it was a massive moment, because after I'd got there, my father was then diagnosed with cancer. So it was a bit, it was all a bit much for us at the time. But I think if they hadn't pushed me and wished, you know, put me in the right direction, I wouldn't be sitting where I am today. I might be sitting back in Armagh. I don't know what I'd be doing to myself, you know. Might be out in the farm or something. So I've been very fortunate, you know, that they pushed me in the right direction. And then obviously I've had a lot of people who helped me along the way.
Are you from a rugby family?
No, I'm from a soccer family. My old fella was he was the chairman of our local team, which was a premiership Irish League Premiership team at the time. I'm not sure if they are anymore, Armagh City.
Yeah.
So he had a lot to do with them going up and being promoted and getting into that league. And to be fair, now I actually don't have a clue how they're doing right now, but that's where I used to go. That's where I used to go on a Saturday afternoon when I was a kid. I'd used to go and play a bit of... I basically went to play mini rugby with the school in the morning, because, you know, you sort of had to do that with the school I was at. And then it was up to the football club with my dad and watching football in the afternoon.
So kind of what age did you decide, this is what I want to do? That, you know, rugby is clearly the sport for me and I'm going to pursue it.
Well, I think whenever I went to the Royal School of Armagh, I was in the same class as Tommy Bowe and these sort of guys, and I was kind of like, right, we didn't really have a chance to play football at the school I was at, and I was probably more interested in football growing up before I went to, you know, what we call big school when I was about 12 years old. And it was just more getting to hang out with your friends, was playing rugby. And, you know, I was always kind of a sporty sort of bloke anyway, so I was more interested in running around chasing a ball than I was in my head and my books and studying. So that was more of a social thing for me. But I think once I got older, and I always wanted to play sport as a profession, and rugby just seemed to be the thing that I was doing a lot of at the time, so sort of went from there.
And what would you be doing if it wasn't rugby then?
Oh, I'd probably have went into some kind of line, into maybe teaching PE or physical education, because we always, you know, my mum was very, my parents were both very sporty anyway, and that's the way they sort of went. And I always find myself with my hands on a ball or something like that. But saying that, I finally got my degree this year, so.
Oh, well, what's that?
I'm no longer a fool, as my brother calls me. He's always saying to me, oh, sure, all you do is chase a ball, like, you know. But finally got over the line with it. So I've got my leadership and management degree. So thankfully got that box ticked. It took me to 33 years of age, but I got there.
Obviously, you guys are champions, as I've mentioned many times in this podcast so far already. But it does feel like this might just be the beginning of the story, because we're starting to see the fruits of the Exeter Academy come through now. Just tell me a little bit about those guys and who you expect to have big seasons next year.
Yeah, well, like, it's class now that, you know, I think we had four guys away on tour with England. Obviously, Jack going away with the Lions, and we've obviously Cam Bignaro and Tommy Francis going away. But the young guys coming through, like I've already alluded to, we've got guys who've, like, Sam Simmons, Stu Townsend, these guys have played in Premiership finals. They've now won in Premiership finals. So, you know, they're 20, 21 years of age. And I think there was a group that came through with Sam Hill, Henry Slade. A group came through about 2-3 years ago. And they're all playing international rugby, you know, sort of now. And they're all sort of making names for themselves. We're almost growing our superstars at home, which we haven't had to go out and find, which is great because they're all... These kids have grown up wanting to play for Exeter Chiefs. They haven't grown up, you know, it's almost like me when I was growing up playing for Ulster. I wanted to play for Ulster, whereas these guys want to play for us, which is great, which means their emotional buy-in's fantastic. But we've got another little group that's coming through with Stu Townsend, Jack Maunder, he's been away now, he's capped by England. You know, and these guys, they're getting exposed to high-level rugby, and I think the way the club's going to go, the way, you know, we're all talking... In 3-4 years' time, these guys are going to be 24, 25, 26. You know, the club's in a really good place, and we've brought in a couple like Ollie Woodburn, Ollie Devoto, these guys again. They're still going to be quite young, and hopefully if we can hold on to these guys, the nucleus of the squad, you put another 2-3 years on it, you know, it's frightening what the club can potentially do.
Yeah, Ollie Devoto, I think, is probably... quietly one of the signings of the season. How have you found him to play with this year? What does he bring?
Yeah, well, like, I'd say Ollie probably had a bit of a slow start with us. He probably just getting up to speed with what we do and how things were operated. Obviously, coming from Bath, he probably had to make a couple of wee changes to his game. But he gets a lot of touches in the way we play, and he fits our bill really well because he's a big, strong boy in the midfield. He can pick a pass. He can carry really well. His communication skills have come on leaps and bounds, but I think that's more confidence in knowing what our game is. And it's brilliant to have the likes of himself and Henry and these guys who can all play in different positions, really. You know, and then you've got Campagnaro who adds a bit of spark and a bit of strength. And we've got the old cart horse, Ian Whitten, if we need to carry up the middle there, you know. So we're quite a good balance amongst us.
Do you really all call Jack Noel the king of the pick and go? Or the pick-and-go king, sorry.
Well, that was the most self-proclaimed name if I ever seen one. And I think as soon as he said it, he regretted it, because as soon as it was said, we were straight into him. Now, where he's plucked that from, I've never heard those words used before. So I think Thomas Walderman was a wee bit more annoyed than anybody else.
Yeah, because he genuinely is the pick-and-go king.
Oh, Thomas Walderman, yes, 100%. Thomas Walderman from a metre out, he always seems to get his hands on the ball, and he always seems to finish it off. So, but he's always getting himself in there, which is great. And I have no problem with him. He keeps scoring 20 tries like that. I have no problem with that.
Absolutely. Well, I was looking at his stats from the Premiership final, and his carrying, I mean, his work rate is phenomenal. He doesn't look like a hard worker, but I think that's like 15 carries.
Yeah, no, like, to be honest, whenever it comes to fitness testing and everything, Thomas is right up there above everybody else. And he's a bloke who definitely doesn't look like, well, he doesn't worry about what he eats. He's in the cookie club. He's eating everything he can get his hands on, you know. But he just is, his engine on him is phenomenal. And he's one of the standout players who's joined us and really added a bit to us as a group, you know. So his skills that he brings, and his talent that he has for us, and he's always given more options too. Well, we've got guys in there who can now play a different kind of game because Thomas is there carrying as well as he does, which is great.
Yeah, and you know, you just have to look at your back row options now. I mean, you might have one of the biggest back rows in the entire Premiership. Lads like Don Ormond, they're absolutely fearsome.
Yeah, no, like, it's great to have those sort of options in around us. You know, we've got guys even injured as well to come back into that back row, and it's one of the most fiercely competitive. Whenever it comes to the team being selected, that's probably the hardest bit, you know, naming who can do what. But the good thing about that is we can play in numerous types of ways, but we don't really want to just have them as big and strong and slow. These guys are all very quick, and they've got some great skills, and we all work quite hard on it and stuff. So we're quite lucky to have guys like that in there.
Now, before I let you go, Gareth, it's currently pre-season, and one of the things which fascinates me is the pre-season routine and how hard everyone's working. So what have you guys been up to?
Well, we met up 2 weeks ago. We had a pretty light meet-up, and then we were whisked away to Portugal for 2 days. So I'd say that was more for relaxation and R&R. We didn't really do an awful lot on that trip. But we got ourselves back in. We did testing the last week. But a normal working week for us just involves, you know, weights most days. We tend to get a down day on a Wednesday, so that seems to be the day we'll be finished by about midday. It's more like a recovery day, get yourself ready for the next 2 days. Tuesday's a big day. We'll get ourselves down to Exmouth Beach, and we'll run up and down the sand dunes and stuff like that. And we like to get into the pool twice a week, so, you know, we've got a few guys who struggle in the pool swimming-wise, but we'll be in the pool at 6:30, doing maybe 45 minutes in the pool, and that'll start our day off and get ourselves back, a couple of rugby sessions, weight sessions. So long days, but good fun, because this time of the year I always feel is really nice, because you get the weekends off and you can chill out for a couple of days with the family and do things that you don't usually get to do.
Yeah, now you just mentioned Portugal there. From an outsider looking in, it looks kind of like Saracens, actually. Like, you guys really enjoy each other's company. Would you say that was one of the secrets to the Exeter success?
Well, I think it is. I think you've got to enjoy working and together as a group, and you want to be able to go onto the field and sort of have that attitude where that's my mate, you know, I'm going to back him up and he's going to back me up. And it's almost that sort of fighting sort of mentality that, you know, maybe you don't get in places where if you don't go and have that bond. And we try to do little bits and pieces. That's one thing we try to do at the start of each year, to go away and just get to know each other. It's another good way to integrate fellas who've maybe not been at the club before. So as opposed to meeting up on the first day and doing a fitness session or fitness testing, you know, it's not a, and you know, when you rock into that, you're not really interested in talking to the guy next year. You're focused on trying to get through the day. So it's a lovely way to meet. But I'd say as a group, we're all very close, and we do try to do things as much as possible, even outside of rugby. You know, our families are all quite integrated with each other. We're all, our wives, partners, all tend to get on very well. And when it comes to a birthday party for one of the kids, it tends to be all Chiefs lads there with all their kids. So that's lovely to have that, because a lot of us are not from the area. So we try to integrate everyone as best we can.
Have you had many new arrivals this season? I actually don't think you have.
Have you? No, we haven't. I'd say we've only got a handful of blokes who've sort of turned over. We don't tend to turn a lot of guys over, which is quite nice as well. So, there's only like Nick White's come in, Matt Cavezic's come in. We've got a couple of guys come in from the Championship as well. So, not a whole heap of a lot, but there's a couple still maybe to arrive that we don't know about yet. But we're in good shape, and like I said, training's been going quite well so far, so hopefully we can push on with.
Fantastic. My final question for the day then, well, actually my final two, as you are such a close squad, if I had to push you, I said, right, Gareth, you got to take two lads out for a beer from Exeter Chiefs, who are you picking?
Are you wanting best drinkers, or are you wanting...
Just the guys that you'd most like to go for a couple of beers with. Not necessarily best drinkers, the guys that you'd pick.
Oh, well, I would be more tended to go for the older bloke, you know. So probably, if I was put in the spot, I'd probably go for my compadre from Northern Ireland, because he enjoys a Guinness with me. So I'd take Ian Whitten with me. And I'd probably bring the oldest man in the squad, Kai Horseman. I'd bring him along as well, because he can always entertain you with... an old tale or something like that.
Well, I've interviewed Kai, and I can confirm that is an excellent choice.
Yeah, well, he'd probably bring a good glass of wine or something with him as well, so it'll be all right.
Yeah, he's a sophisticated man.
He is indeed. He's interesting.
Right, well, Gareth, thank you so much for your time, and best luck for this season. Just remind everyone, where can we find details on your testimonial events? Where can we find you on social media?
Yes, so at Steno10Years is the Twitter feed, and it's also on Facebook as well. But if you go to www.steno10.co.uk, you will find all the information on all my events and everything that's coming up. And if you want to buy tickets on things like that, just go to that website and you'll find all the info that you need.
Fantastic. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.